kids, are you ready? Are you sure? For music trivia, three rounds in store. It's head to head, who's going to war? Are you ready to settle the score? I said, are you ready to settle the score?
Welcome to a live edition of Settle the Score. My name is Matt Nose, joined as always by the musical director, the one and only Mr. Andy Merriweather. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. How's it going over there? It feels like we haven't seen each other or spoken in ages to do a show, I guess, but that's because we've waited for the live show. But yeah, I've missed you, man. How's it going?
Well, I mean, technically, we didn't meet last week because we were supposed to do the show, and then we were hoping to reschedule those guests to today.
Yeah.
And then found out late Sunday, hey, it's just not in the cards.
Yes. And which is a good thing because of the reason. Yeah. Because the
writer's strike lifted and just like, okay, I've got work again. And be like, well, go do your work, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was an exciting lineup. So once that gets all sorted, I think people are going to be.
They're both
pretty hyped about that.
They both messaged and said, I genuinely want to do the show.
Yeah.
It's the strike ended. You're like,
yeah, exactly.
I get it.
No, that's good.
We apologize to those that are joining us live. We started a little bit late. We've been literally going through technical difficulties on both our ends for the past 35 minutes trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
So basically, if it gets weird and glitchy, just know that that's been the bane of our existence for the better part of half an hour.
Yeah. I guess the future of our show is cableless because it seems like it'll be the only method. But yeah, I don't know. The thing is with cables is you don't know which one, and my setup is elaborate, and I couldn't figure out which cable was causing the issue. So I just got to rebuy them all.
Yeah, but then suddenly when we had late to the party on, for those that are fans of the show, and no one neglected to mention during the entire recording of the show, hey, you sound drunk. Because suddenly my Zoom started making me talk like I'm chewing gum.
Bananas.
Yeah, and then it did that not 3 minutes ago.
Like, yeah, it was so kind of natural sounding that, I mean, it sounds not normal, but it was not so weird that I was like, there's something wrong. I just thought, you just sound a little deeper. Did you go and listen to that back to hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so weird.
I messaged the three of you and said, hey, why didn't anyone say anything? And I give them a pass because they haven't been listening to my annoying voice every week at that point for well over a year.
Yeah. I don't know if it's part of my culture to raise issues on air like that. So, and then I think at some point it was just like, I got used to it in the episode and forgot to then mention it. And yeah, but it was an unusual one and it kind of never happened again. And then 3 minutes ago, just before it went live, it found its way in again. So I don't know what that is, but,
no idea.
Yeah. I guess the answer is I'll just move to LA and we'll just do it in person.
Perfect.
And then we can both be deep, but at least we'll both be on the same pitch. So this is cool. We're doing our first live thing in a long time. We haven't done a sort of non-episode in a while.
Yeah, it's been 100 episodes. So for 100 shows, all right, suddenly my certain programs are deciding they want to update right now. Hopefully that didn't affect.
I didn't know. Nothing.
It's very jittery. Yeah, but it's been 100 episodes. I think we did the last live one at episode 52.
At the year. Yeah. Cool. So it's good fun. We've got tons of questions to get through from people. I haven't gone onto the link to see if anybody's.
Oh, yeah. We've got plenty in the chat. Quite a few people watching. Or thanks to all of you. Those that have left something in the chat so far. Eric Grebner, Philip P. from London. Let's see. Drew Enns, Troy, Melissa Woody. Mike Shea, our thanks to all of you for having left comments. We thoroughly appreciate it. And if any of you have a question for us, or if you have a request of Andy, a score or soundtrack that you want to hear, or something you'd like us to talk about, a grievance that you want to air, whatever it is, go ahead and put it in there. Michael Joel checking in. That is it. We got some questions from our Discord group.
Yep.
Got questions from our patrons. And I'm sure we'll have questions in the chat itself as we go along. So where do you want to start? You want to start with the Discord? You want to start with patrons?
You can kick things off. I'm catching up with the chat. You can ask the first question. If there's any questions in, should we prioritize the ones that are here? I see just the latest comment is a question, but I'm still catching up on the reading. I'm being quite unprofessional, actually, but
that's all right.
All I do is I go straight for my name, anybody that's mentioned me, because I'm arrogant. Right, here we go.
Well, it's not like London you have a Google alert.
That's quite interesting.
What's that?
Phil P from London Town. You did mention this, but yeah, I don't recognize Phil. Have we spoken to Phil before?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Phil, welcome.
Welcome, yeah. Any cool?
All right, well, Mike Shea's question is for Andy, and it says, what's a movie, rather, you've wanted to learn music from that you haven't had a chance to yet?
That's very interesting, that I've wanted to learn music from. Maybe not that I've wanted to learn music from, but there are scores that haven't made their way onto the show yet because it would take a particular person. And actually, I think one of the first scores that I mentioned to you way back before we'd even done an episode one was the score from I Am Legend. I remember saying to you, like, talking about the dynamic range of knowability in scores. So like the ones that everyone knows, your Star Wars and Jurassic Park and stuff. And then I said, there are scores out there that are so beautiful, but people would need clues to kind of guide them towards the film and might not necessarily get it just on the score alone. And it was this beautiful piece called I Am Robert Neville from, or My Name is Robert Neville, I think. And it kind of goes like, let me know if that's too quiet with piano. But it's a really, really beautiful, like, sweeping score in G minor. And it's just like finding the right person that's going to be, oh, that's from I Am Legend. Because I mean,
yeah, we've used I Am Legend, twice.
The Bob Marley stuff?
The Bob Marley. And I think we used the score once.
Oh, we did? Okay. Well, you've been very nice to me then, because that is one of my favorite scores. And yeah, I always felt it was one of those where I actually remember our conversation going like, I don't think anyone's going to get that, so maybe we'll lean, you know. And we never knew how kind of widespread we'd have to go with our, you know, filmography in terms of what we've had to pull into the show, and we've gone pretty far and wide, really. I had forgotten they got on the show, but yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful score.
If I'm ever on the fence and I ask you, do you think this is gettable, and if your response is, I mean, maybe with the right clue, like, oh, that means that's fucking tough.
So is there anything, because you curate the show, so really I'm in your hands in terms of what gets on the show. So is there anything on your end that you haven't found a means to get it on the show that you'd love to hear played?
Oh, yeah, there are tons, but it's just like, I don't think anybody knows that. That's a movie that I like, and I know that I'm part of a niche.
Yeah.
But it's finding the right person to be able to do that with, and getting two of them, so it's a fair question, is really difficult.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you know coming into it, okay, I know X is a fan of this movie because we have talked about it. Do I think Y is a fan as well?
Yeah.
No clue. I've gone out on a limb sometimes and be like, I think it's fair. And it worked out. The one that I'm thinking of in general, we used a slightly deeper cut from Amadeus because I knew one of the guests was a big fan, and I'm like, it seems like it'd be in the other one's wheelhouse, and the other one ended up getting the question.
Sure.
So I was like, okay, that worked out really well, but there is no worse feeling than watching people struggle when you're like, shit, I knew I shouldn't have put that on there.
Right. No, I know what you mean. And I can see it in you when two people are struggling, when the movie's revealed and they go, oh, okay, well, I haven't seen that or whatever. And I can see it in you that you're kind of, because you put so much effort into curating the show. It's not, you don't throw 15.
No, this
in.
Is not. Yeah. I do not do it slapdash. It takes me a long fucking time.
Yeah. So when you, I guess not getting it right is not the right words, because it's just unlucky, you know, that someone said, oh, I haven't seen that movie forever, or I haven't seen that one yet or whatever. And I can see it in you that you're kind of like hard on yourself about it, even though you can't have possibly known. Unless, I mean, what's the point in going to someone and saying, have you seen these movies, and then adding it to the show? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. So, yeah, but I can see it in those moments in your eyes that you kind of, you take that to heart, and it's like, right, you know, and it's almost like
I make a mental note and be like, all right, well, if we ever have you back, now I know.
Yeah.
There are certain times you're like, yeah, I never saw it, and be like, you didn't see that fucking massive movie? And I don't give a shit that you don't know it, because everybody else we know has seen that movie.
Yeah. And there have definitely been multiple times where people have gone away and then watched something because it came up on the show. Like, I've seen Late to the Party go to films on their show and react to films that have come up. You know, it happened with Labyrinth. We were like, surely you've, you know, and they hadn't. And then they go and react to it, and they get to that moment in the in Labyrinth where it's Dance Magic Dance, and they reference Settle the Score, because they're like, oh, this, we heard that song there first. So that was fun. Yeah,
like,
so
they post their, like, hey, first time watching, and I'm always shocked. But
yeah,
because there's so many movies, there's so many things they've seen that I haven't seen. I just don't post, hey, first time watching Halloween 3 or whatever the case is. I know they're both into horror, and I don't watch horror. That's just like, you add all the horror movies to our list, and dude, I am fucking in the dark on almost every one of those titles.
Right.
I've heard the name. I've never seen it.
Yeah. I just added I haven't added it yet, but I saw a movie. Oh, you know what? It won't come up in the show anytime soon. So I just saw The Exorcist.
Oh, the new one?
No, the original, but it was in cinemas for the first time in whatever long. It's the 50th anniversary, so I just went last night to see The Exorcist, the original. It was the version called The Version You Haven't Seen, which came out in the year 2000. It was like a recut. And it has loads of extended stuff in it. It's about 12 minutes longer and recolored as well.
Puking?
No, none of the new stuff was... they obviously kept in all the exorcism stuff. It was all dialogue and probably a little bit unnecessary. Oh, do you know what the crab walk scene down the stairs is in that cut, not in the original cut? And it's because the wires are showing in the original, but in the year 2000, they CGI'd out them. So that's the only scene, but I'd seen that so many times on YouTube anyway. But it was good. They had recolored it. And it was in 4K. It was a really cool experience. I got to take my 18-year-old niece. She's my cousin. She is really into horror, really getting herself into horror, and had never even, like, she'd heard of it, but not, you know, 18 years old. I mean, when would she have been exposed to The Exorcist? So that was really cool getting to show her that movie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a fun experience. But, yeah, there's a scene in there where they're all sat around the piano, and the priest is singing a song on the piano, and I was like, desperate, want to get out my phone and make a note of this, but I remembered, so I'll add it to our show, because that is for the right person, and probably only one person, William Bibbiani, that would be a great song to put in.
Yeah, I think there'd be a full list, because anybody that's a true horror fan, that's a classic.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah,
but I'd forgotten
Christian,
there was a song around the piano that they're all singing when, Reagan comes down from being upstairs in bed, and she tells the guy going, I guess he's an astronaut or something. She says, you're going to die up there or something like that. And then she wets herself. She interrupts a song, and I was like, oh, a song in The Exorcist. Great. That's going on the list. So yeah. Anyway, but I can't get my phone out of the cinema, so I had to make a mental note of it. Anything else from that chat?
I mean, from Mike Shea? No. Troy asked for you to play the theme song and for me to sing it.
Right. The timing would all be.
You don't know the orchestration anymore, and I can't sing anymore, so that's probably a no-go.
I have I have forgotten the score. I can't even remember what key it was in. Is it?
I mean, I like the classy dinner piano version.
that's my working out genre.
that sounds great.
Yeah.
We're shopping at a high-end store and just cooling over there.
That's right. I saw an interview with Billy Joel once where he said that if you play anything in ninths, any chords in nine, that it will sound right. And it's really funny because he was like playing Moon River using just ninths and he was playing all the wrong chords. But as long as he stuck to kind of going... And it all sounded good. And it was a really funny like tip for pianists to be like, if you get requests where you don't really know what to play, just play these ninths. It kind of encompasses all the chords.
Oh, that's a good little tip.
Yeah, it was fun. All right. As soon as we run out of comments on here, hopefully they keep coming. I'll throw one in from the Discord.
All right. Melissa Woody says, what's a more unknown or underrated movie that you like recommending to people? I know that when they came out 28 Days Later and The Raid Redemption, I was trying to get people to go see in the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't like horror. And I was like, dude, 28 Days Later is amazing.
Yeah.
It's
definitely genre busting for sure.
It's more so that anybody can identify with what if the world just goes to hell and you're one of the last few survivors. Yes, it's zombies, but it's the existential threat. And the ponderous idea of it's all gone. What do you do? Where do you find meaning in this struggle?
Yeah. No, I love that movie. I think we've spoken about it before, maybe not on the show, but there's that event over here called Secret Cinema, and we've done a few of them now, Dirty Dancing, and there's a Back to the Future and whatever. Really, really fun. And they basically build the entire world that these films are in. So they built the town of Hill Valley for Back to the Future. They built the entire town in a field in London. It was incredible. There are YouTube clips of it called Secret Cinema Presents Back to the Future. And they built like the interior of the Death Star for Empire Strikes Back and things like that. I think it was maybe not the Death Star, but yeah, I didn't go to that one. But we went to the 28 Days Later one. And they basically walk you through the entire movie. You're being guided through and you're seeing all the cast members acting out the scenes. You're almost like as if you're passing them on the street kind of thing. And there's the scene with the priest where he's like hit with this kind of like, you know, godlike light. And that in person, when he like retches, I literally will not forget that. When I picture that moment, I don't picture the movie. I see it as if I've seen it down the corridor and there was this like light hit in the back of him and he was in silhouette and then he kind of retches and then runs towards you. Honestly, amazing experience.
It's great.
Yeah. And then we all watched the movie in hospital beds, looking up at ceiling held sort of 100-inch screens held from the ceiling. So we're all like lying on our backs in hospital beds, like looking up with hospital sheets up over us. And the zombies are running around in between the beds and shit like that. It was just phenomenal effort. The tickets are expensive, but if anyone's in the UK, you've got to time it with a Secret Cinema experience. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah. Like way too good for even the money that you spend, which is, I think tickets are like about 100 quid each. But you spend that on a night at the theater theater tickets are really expensive. This one is immersion and it's basically like everyone's on point. Every actor's like nailing it. It's just so cool to like live in a movie.
And it's unique.
So unique, yeah. And it's limited, so they move on to the next film, you know, 6 weeks later, and it's unbelievable. So they do one a year, but it runs for about 6 weeks every year. So they spend their whole year preparing and building sets and stuff like that. It's absolutely phenomenal. So if anyone is over here, it's definitely something to look up. But all the highlights of the ones they've done are on YouTube for sure. All right, what was the question, Melissa? What he said.
Unknown or underrated movie that you recommend to people?
I think there was a question from the Discord about our favorite film, and I think mine and that kind of coincide. So, so basically, my favorite film is The Nines. I've spoken about it. It's why I wear a green bracelet on my wrist most of the time, because of The Nines. And it's a Ryan Reynolds starring film, Ryan Reynolds and Melissa McCarthy, that I went straight to DVD, and I found it in like a Blockbuster bucket, directed by John August. And yeah, so rare. I think you can probably find it on Amazon, like import or something.
What's
like that.
What's the gist of the story?
It's basically the idea. Well, if I do that, but I don't want to give away the kind of the plot is, wow, the twist is the plot. So basically Ryan Reynolds plays three versions of himself. So the film is set in three chapters.
Okay.
In the first one, he plays a Hollywood actor, well, like a TV actor of like a crime series. And then the second one, he plays the writer of a show. And then the third one, he plays a video game designer. And it's kind of about him in control of his world. So in the actor, he's more of a puppet. And then the writer, he gets to kind of design. And then the video game one is more of a, he has full control. He has all the cheat codes and everything. He's God. Yes. Very interesting. So, so it's kind of, it might play a little bit like, there was a short film that John August did with Melissa McCarthy that it's based on, where Melissa McCarthy was a little girl who had phone calls from God, and they had like a telephone relationship, and she was his best friend and stuff like that. And in The Nines, it's a little more, he vacations with humans. So it's a little bit more like that. That might be revealing a little too much, but that would mean people are giving it a go. So if I've spoiled for you, it means you give it a go, which is a good thing. But that's the gist of it. It's kind of like, what if God was one of us? Not steal music lyrics, but yeah. It's very cool.
Just a slob like one of us?
That's exactly, yeah.
Just a stranger on the bus?
I think it's Ryan Reynolds, like sort of prime young Ryan Reynolds, and he's buff as fuck, so not slobby. But yeah, it's really cool. Oh. I really like it. I promised myself I would see it 9 times just to coincide with the themes of the movie. It's one of those movies where the number 9 comes up a bunch. And then I got to 9 quite happily and easily. And then the next like girlfriend I had, or the next like person I met at work who hadn't seen it, I'm like, oh, I'll watch it with you, you know. And then I watched it 10, 11, 12, you know, and I've seen it so many times now. Yeah, can't even count. But yeah, I had this dream of stopping at 9, and obviously it didn't happen. But yeah, no, really recommend it. And that is pretty much unheard of. No one I've ever spoken to has heard of it, I believe.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of his filmography, and I have not seen that.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, there you go. What about you? Anything that no one has seen that you kind of love recommending? There's also that thing of having a hidden gem that you don't want to give away, like when you see a band that you kind of feel like you have a little bit of a part of.
Yeah,
or do you tend to share?
I know that feeling where someone you saw beforehand and you really like, and then they break big, but I'm always happy for them. I'm never the individual is like, ah, oh, I liked them before. It's just like, ah, good for them.
Get out there.
Hopefully more people, you know, find whatever you're doing and enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. I mean, the first two that came to mind, I just remember trying to get people to go to the theater for 28 Days Later and Raid Redemption.
Were pretty... Topsy Turvy was one that I don't know how big that is, but I hadn't even heard of it, and you were like adamant.
Oh, I love that movie. I think it's pretty flawless, that was, in my opinion.
That and Boiling Point were Boiling Point come from me? No, someone else told me Boiling Point, and then I brought it up on our London show, but that's where Topsy Turvy came from. I think we did the London show for Top 10. And I think Topsy Turvy came up on that, and you were pretty adamant that I need to watch that. And
oh, you're a guy that likes musicals, and it's
and I haven't heard of it.
Sullivan, a behind the scenes, how they created the Mikado.
Yeah.
It's got some of my favorite scenes in all of cinema.
Yeah, actually, you love Amadeus and that, and I think they're a great pair, I suppose, in terms of
period piece about music and performing and whatnot. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, cool.
All right. Do you want to do one from some patrons?
I've got a
request here as well.
Yeah. So the favorite movie of all time, I'll read the exact wording of it. It's from Eric Grebner. He says, "If I held at if held at gunpoint, so this is now a completely different scenario. What would you say is your favorite film of all time?" And then he puts in brackets, "I think I know Matt's answer." So if Eric Grebner's in the chat, I thought
he was earlier.
Okay.
I don't know if he's still there.
It'll be interesting to, I'm going to respond to him on Discord a second.
He may know my go-to answer for this.
Sure.
Which I just say Fletch.
Oh yeah. Okay.
If there's a gun to my head, pull the trigger. Cause I don't think you actually have the balls to do it over a question this trivial. I think there's, it comes down to what mood am I in? That's my favorite. I don't have a singularly favorite, but you get asked it a lot, especially, you know, having done a show where I list movies and people just assume, oh, you have your top 10. That's, I always fought against doing a top 10 favorites. Cause it's like, dude, I don't have, I've got like five or six that are in that discussion. And then after that, it's like, I don't, what mood am I in? Cause there are tens of thousands of movies, and depending on genre, some certain genres, I've got like 5, 6, 7, 8 films that I just love for various reasons. So
have you ever done that thing where you pick your favorite movie of every year since you were born or whatever? Have you ever done that kind of thing? Tried to curate that? I mean, it's easier when you have Letterboxd and you don't.
Yeah. Not specifically. No.
So
I don't think so. At least,
Melissa shared with me her list recently, and she had done it properly where she'd pick one movie every year. Mm-hmm. And I looked on Letterboxd, filtered by every year, and I was like, I had like 2-3 answers per that I can't pick from, you know. Some years are just crazy. I don't know what I would do. Maybe it's a bullet to the head moment.
Certain years it's just like, dude, there's 3 amazing dramas, there's 2 comedies that I can't stop watching, there's a fantastic sports movie that is the perfect, it's every cliche and they just do it the best.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm sorry, which am I supposed to pick here?
Have you ever seen a movie that's so good, but you saw it late and then you couldn't possibly add it to like your favorites because there's a point in time where your favorites are kind of built from? And I find that I can't add anything to my favorites right now. Time.
Oh, really? I still add.
You still add, like, you watch a film, like a 2021 film, you go, oh, that's going immediately into my favorites of all time.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah, 100%.
I don't
say, well, is it going to crack my top 10? Like, I walked out of Sicario and I was like, amazing. Amazing. I love that movie. No Country for Old Men. Amazing. I love that movie.
But like, I guess I have this thing where Melissa and I talked about this as well, around the same discussion, was that there's like a movie that I love with my head and a movie that I love with my heart. And I don't think anything is kind of, I can know if a movie is a 5-star, like flawless, like perfect cinema movie. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I'm capable of making something an all-time favorite in my heart that wasn't in like the informative years of my life, like from that kind of the 14 to 24 where everything is just, you're finding out what you're into and things like that. I don't know. Now it feels like if I watch a movie that's incredible, I know it's amazing and I feel that way about it, but I don't think it like gets into my all time favorites, like in terms of feeling. It's more of an intellectual love for the movie, but right. I don't know. Maybe me. Anyway, moving on. Okay. Interesting about the show. Settle the score. Favorite evolutions to the show since it started, from Matt Scanlon. I think Matt Scanlon, that's the guy that does some clues.
Yeah, he does.
That guy. Favorite evolution to the show. What do you think?
Well, you know what? I will say this, as far as, since you brought up Scanlon and the clues, certain individuals that give clues have kind of tuned in to what we're looking for. And now they're coming with clues. You're like, hey, so-and-so has got 3 bangers today.
Right.
And you're like, that's awesome. It makes me so happy. I'm just like, okay, great. We have even more to choose from. It makes it difficult. Honestly, for those people that submit comments and you only hear your name once, trust me, We're just trying to be judicious and fair as to which ones we use. There are certain shows where two people could be all of them, or one person has a chance of being all of them. And there's a cavalcade of individuals now that have that ability, because we've added 3-4 people lately that have gotten so good at it. And other ones previously that were only throwing in every once and again are now like, fuck it, I'm going to send 6 a week or whatever. And you're like, I'm glad you started up and putting more in there, because instead of us going, that one's pretty good, that would be one of the 6. Now we got like, there's 3 solid ones of those 6.
Yeah, they just keep going. And they kind of, the good thing about it all being this community is that they're all kind of using each other and getting ideas from each other.
Yeah, you creating that WhatsApp group was a stroke of brilliance.
Yeah, so that I hadn't even considered that as an evolution to the show. I was like in the rules kind of mindset, but that probably is the biggest difference to the show, is having those new angles for clues.
Yeah. Sometimes I get lazy, because that is the one thing that I'm open about. Like, I suck at it.
Yeah. I mean, a movie has to be brand new to the show for me to even think about adding clues now, I think. Because you look at a movie that we've had on the show before, and there's like already the whole alphabet in lists.
Yeah. What people don't know is, for, I would say now at this point, maybe different movies, because we'll take all the clues and put them, if there's like 2, 3, 4 songs from a movie that are all potentially in the list, like say Pulp Fiction.
Sure.
There's 5 Pulp Fiction songs on our soundtracks list, but we just grab from the Pulp Fiction the last time we used it and bring port those over.
Yeah, it's just going.
Yeah, and then eventually it gets to a size of like, we don't need to add to this anymore. So we have, of those that have a crazy long list, there's probably somewhere in the ballpark of 70 or 80 films where there's minimum 26 clues, and sometimes there's 30, 32, 34, 36, and you're like, I can't use all of these. And you're just looking at it and be like, thank God we've moved on.
Yeah. There's a thing about some of the clues are transferable, but there's no real means to transfer. There's no, like, if someone put in a clue for a baseball movie, that's if it's baseball centric, it might be transferable to another baseball movie. But unless it's a sports show, that's really hard to do, because like, where do you put it? And so there are things where there are clues that are so good and they'll probably just fall through the net and never get you. I mean, it will happen.
And it's nothing against, honestly, I wish, because we've had texts back and forth and being like, oh man, you'll text me and be like, hey, I'm adding now.
Yeah. Especially if I've seen that you've already started deciding what clues are going into the show, and I'll go, you know, cause I see that you've bolded like your favorites per film.
Yeah. And I try and like, okay, and we used like, that one okay, the last I've time.
I've just added like 5 from this person and they're solid. So like, revisit. Yeah. I mean, they're just so good. They're just so good, the clues now. And everyone that's joined that group has really got it now. Like, you know, it's.
And some of them like early on were tepid about adding their 2 cents in for whatever reason. Maybe they didn't feel like they'd be good at it. And trust me, I would be in that mix as well. I'm not good at it. Every once and again, I'll come up with one that I'm very pleased with myself about. But usually it's just like, I like all the Andes way more than I like any of the ones. Or mine are way too on the nose. Because sometimes I'll just write something down and just like kind of get the juices flowing. Hopefully something comes out. Mm. But I never think in puns. No. It just works so well in a clue format.
Right.
You need it boiled and distilled down into. But the best is when you see, at least from my perspective, movie comes up and say like 6 people have submitted for it, but one individual has submitted 15. And you're like, well, clearly that person loves this movie.
Yeah.
Because they've roiled it, like it's rolled around in their brain so much.
You can see it. I think Matt Scanlon in particular he's pretty consistent on the amount of clues that he gives per movie, like find something to clue.
Yeah.
And I can't decipher the movies that he loves or not, because I think he's pretty consistent in that way. But like Eric Grebener, who's another great.
That's who I was thinking of. When they tell it's a movie Grebener loves.
Yeah. So like, it's like
legitimately 12.
Yeah.
And you're Ken, like, 6 of these are great.
Ken's a new member to the Clue group in a way. And you can see he's starting to have that little bit where it's like, okay, so five or six clues from him for that movie. Yeah. You must know this movie.
Yeah, I love it. When somebody just goes hard at a movie for no reason, and you're like, it's great. Yeah.
And what's good, it might be a movie that no one else has come up with anything for. And I think that did happen recently with one of Ken's, where it was like a classic, and where he was coming up with way more. And then they're all getting to know each other. So people will go like, this is clearly like... I've seen this where they go like, oh, this is going to be Melissa's. And they all back off and they,
oh, really?
And then she rolls out like four clues for it. And yeah, this happens. And that's really interesting. The person that I'm baffled by, just to call him out, and I know he can handle it. Houston is so good at giving clues and he does one per movie. And I don't understand. Look, he does like, it's always quality over quantity with him, but he does one like genius clue per movie. And I'm like, you can't, like, you must have thought of more. He must do, because they're so good. And he just puts them in one message. Don't know if you've ever seen this on the disc, on the Patreon page, but like, he does one message and it's all the films that I've asked for. And he does one clue per, just in one message. Like, so he's probably got a notes page or something. He's thinking of them all, typing them all out. And I'm like, and then he just doesn't revisit it. And I'm like, but they're so good. Do more, you know? Let's have some backups.
Yeah, maybe this will spark him. Who knows?
Yeah. Get on it, Houston. Come on, man.
But yeah, as far as an evolution, I love, because early on, the first like 30 shows, that was the bane of my existence. That, and well, putting the show, because eventually we got to the point, I remember texting you and be like, I need to restart the song list over because I just spent 5 or 6 hours putting this show together.
Oh, God, I thought about it the other day that we used to never repeat.
And I was, yeah, like, I could go back. I have to look. Wild.
I think it was like, at the year mark, wasn't it?
It was very close to the year. If you go back and watch every one of those, we did not repeat a single song.
Yeah. Or, yeah, maybe by accident, maybe. But yeah, the intention was never to repeat. And I think we pretty much held to that. And like,
and it got so hard because you had to eventually go, it still needs to be gettable. So it's great that that song is from that movie. But it plays on a radio while they're in the car talking between the two of them, and you can faintly hear it. So that shit doesn't count. So then I have to move on to the next one, and I'm scanning movie after movie, and just like, this is bananas. We gotta go back.
Yeah, and I've started to. You've seen in the notes page that I've started to contextualize suggestions from me now. So I'll say like where they are in the movie and why it makes it so significant and things like that, which helps because I think before. My suggestions for things were like, you were having to go and watch the scene if you could find it at all and make sure it was like, reasonable. And I think I'd put in one for Baby Driver, and it literally was on the radio in a diner. And I put it on there because I had the Baby Driver soundtrack and I was just listing them all.
Yeah, it's just like,
that's not a good way to play. I've stopped doing soundtracks like that. It's always fully curated. There's no like laziness with our notes anymore.
I just don't want us getting called on like, where is that in the movie?
Sure.
A, and not knowing, and B, having to defend. Hey, do you remember that radio that was on? And you could, if they're talking at 50 decibels, it was at like 45 and you could kind of hear something in the back.
Yeah,
that was the song. Like that's, and also not...
with soundtracks, sometimes it'll be that it played, there are three songs in the credits that no one stayed for, and that's
not fair. That doesn't count.
I mean, we've done a couple of credit songs, but it's so significant, like the
it's
way
usually it's like in, or... but as soon as they go to black to be like directed by whatever, it's the song that hits you in the face. It's like wake up from the Matrix.
As soon as that
cuts over, it's like bam, that is a song, you know it.
Yeah, exactly that. Okay, yeah. Over to the YouTube chat then if you've got anything.
Well, there is a request.
Oh, really?
From Phil, who's in London. This was a while ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. We've been shooting the breeze. He wants to know if you can play anything off the top of your head from John Carpenter, and then if we have a favorite of his.
Yeah, I mean, I mean the obvious one is the Halloween. I can probably play that like, asleep. I one night at Halloween when I was a kid, me and my sister in the house, just us, like looking after her, looking after me. She's 3 years older and 10 years more mature than me. And I was sat at the piano in the dark in the dining room where we had the piano. She didn't know I was there. And I just like so patient, just waiting and waiting and waiting. And I waited for her to like be within earshot. And then I just did, I literally just did that in the dark, just on a real like piano. And yeah, one of my favorite things I've ever done. So good. I think I might've been waiting like way too long to pull off that, but it freaked her out. Yeah, so that, and I'm pretty sure like I have a soundscape. If you just chat for a second, I'll try and find it. But the, I think,
Let's see. I think my favorite might be the theme from Escape from New York.
Yeah, that's actually the soundscape I was trying to use.
Yeah, I think it fits the movie really well, and it's got a good groove to it. That found.
Yeah.
Da 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 da.
That's right. Yeah. Is it Amos? I'm trying. Let me just carry on talking. But yeah, that one. I'm gonna get the.
Yeah, that one. Like we've never used the thing on the show, just because I don't think that. I think that's my favorite John Carpenter film, probably by a wide margin, to be perfectly honest. I like a lot of his others, but that's the one that I'm most happy to rewatch. Followed
what's,
maybe by
Escape?
What's that?
Escape, you mean? Escape
no,
from New York?
No, I think Escape does not hold up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. I just had to find the first chord. So it goes like this. That wasn't a bad effort for random requests that I haven't worked on. Yeah. So that one's really cool. Yeah, I'm really jealous. I know John Carpenter does the LA shows. I see like Perry Nemiroff always goes to them, and like he does like the maybe at the Hollywood Bowl or something, he does like a show every year. And I'd love to get to that because I've heard it's very, very strong. What else we got?
Let's see, from Swings and Magic Roundabouts podcast.
Oh, that's the Swindon town. That's my hometown where I'm living right now. The podcast about the football team, and that's my cousin's podcast. So he's writing from that.
So are we going to take this nepotistic question as a rule?
Yeah, he was one of our guests, actually. Anthony, if you remember, my cousin.
Oh, yeah. Long time ago.
Yeah, very long time ago, yeah. What did he ask?
Well, he says specifically to you, Andy, are there any composers? First off, he put, is there any composers? Get your shit together, Ant. Are there any composers you tend to stay away from due to complexity or dislike or otherwise?
Yeah. Do you know who I really don't like playing music from? And I have been tasked with it on the show. Is that Hilda, who did the Joker score?
Oh, sure.
And did something recently, and I was watching the movie. What was the movie that they did recently? It doesn't matter. A new movie that just came out like fairly recently, and I was listening to the score in that and going like, oh, not looking forward to that coming on the show. Yeah, just not enjoyable.
Big enough. The movie was well known enough to make it onto the show.
Oh yeah. That person, I don't know anything about them. Hilda, I don't know how to pronounce their surname. What movie was it? I'm just having a quick look.
Yeah, I don't. Just saying, Hilda doesn't do anything.
Oh, did they do Tar, Women Talking? Yeah, Tar. That is. Basically, like, wasn't it banned Tar from being Oscar nominated for best score? Purposefully bad, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember Tar, I was specifically remember watching Tar in London and being like, oh, this is going to be a nightmare if Tar gets on the show. Because it was,
yeah, I think
that weirdly spiked in popularity Tar for a second and then it's kind of died down again.
I think that's a rewatchable movie for me.
No, I think it was like a front runner for best picture for a little while, and then it's died off.
With certain, you know, cinematic aesthetes, so to speak. I think they were all clamoring for that to be, because it was, her performance was so amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was. She was the entire movie. That being said, I thought the movie was just good. I didn't think it was great.
Yeah. I have this, sometimes you see a movie that's got that kind of prestige, and I kind of have to remind myself that it doesn't have to be good. Yeah. You don't have to have loved it, you know, just because people are telling you it's elite.
Sometimes a great performance can happen in a good or average film.
Sure.
Like, you ever see Trumbo?
No.
Ryan Cranston? He's phenomenal in it. The movie's fine.
Right. Okay.
And that happens. It's just like, that performance, whoever that individual can be amazing. Mm. But it doesn't make me connect with the movie as a whole. Maybe. That's just me, one person's opinion. So,
yeah. No, I agree. Where are we? Okay, so I see that comment. Okay, so it would be that person. And plus, any chance I can do, avoid trying to pronounce their surname. So that's two reasons why I don't want them on the show. I can see Peggy's ask for the Prince of Thieves score. We did that recently, right? I do really love it. It came up recently. And it's just...
Yeah, it's a good score.
Yeah. Is that score used for the start of like a production company's logo now? Someone answer that in the comments. I feel like it is. I feel like that score is now incorporated.
Yeah, but I think you could do that for a lot of things, like the ascending chord progression on that. When you get into the full scope, that bum, 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 that sounds like five different things to me.
Sure. Yeah.
That's all of music.
Yeah, I guess so. I just feel like the production company on Prince of Thieves then took it as their score, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that's Costner's production company.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Oh, maybe it is. Yoshimitsu says that sounds like a sports movie, and it really does sound like... It has a Remember the Titans thing, which is another... so good, that score. I love playing that one on the show.
Yeah, but I don't think any...
Morgan Creek. Eric Grebner just said it's Morgan Creek.
Okay.
Yeah, and Adib just said Morgan Creek. So that is right. It is their score. Cool. I'm glad something Creek, Peggy covers. Morgan Creek. Yeah. Lovely. All right, cool. So that was cool. That is trivia.
All right. Drew Wins wants to know what's your proudest moment of the show?
I mean, being asked to do it is the kind of, you know, emotional holistic answer. I still Anna and I still talk about the moment that we first spoke on FaceTime. Mm-hmm. And I had my pen for writing.
Oh.
And I threw it across the room when you said who our first guest was going to be. I just threw the pen across the room and I looked up at Anna and she was going like that, like crazy. Because I came from the world of being a fan of Schmodown and then got into you guys top 10, you know, and came to your live shows, Chicago and London, and met you and your wife, and all of a sudden we're kind of doing a show together. It was just a sort of a reasonably fast trajectory. So yeah. But I guess in terms of an actual moment on the show, I still go back to the, I brought it up as an anecdote at dinner with people the other day, that I got to play the Mighty Ducks theme to Scott. Oh,
sure.
Is wild. I mean, it's one of those where it won't matter to anyone else, but the fact that Mighty Ducks was such a big movie for me as a kid, I was like perfect ripe age for it. And then getting to just play him the score, and then for him to like go, oh, I know, you know, he recognized it straight away, and it meant something to him, and that was nice, you know, that was nice. And then, you know, the fact that him and I will still engage, and he'll interact on my posts, and you know, about Ezra and stuff like that. So that's a really big thing. He's such a nice guy.
I mean, as dumb as it, like, so live in LA, you, if you want to, you can meet famous people. It's not difficult to do.
Yeah.
But I think easily the most excited I've ever been. And trust me, I'm not going to name drop. I've met some huge A-list stars and hung out, shot the shit and whatever.
Yeah.
But a dude named Jimmy Hart, who was a manager for wrestlers on WWF when I was a kid.
Yeah. I remember.
He just strolled up and he recognized the dude that I'm friends with and I was talking to. And he was like, hey, man, what's going on? And then I was like, are you fucking kidding?
Right.
Jimmy Hart. And I, at that point, I already knew Roddy Piper and I knew a couple other guys that just, they would come and hang out at comedy clubs and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I was just, I guess, used to it, but just out of nowhere, here's Hart. So I text my brother afterwards. I was like, dude, you're never going to guess who I just met.
Right.
And he was just as excited as I was, because that's something like, I don't know, it takes me back to being 6 years old, hating that guy, just like the mouth from the south and all that stupid stuff. So it's somebody that you, a part of you kind of awakens that has been dormant because you haven't thought, had those memories spring forth in so long that, just, I don't know, it was a weird energy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. I like stuff like that where it's kind of, yeah, Anna and I were rewatching our wedding videos recently, and Luke, who did the logo for our show, he was my best man and made a speech, and he talked about he told an anecdote in his speech about me and him, and knowing that no one would care because we've tried to tell this story to other people, and no one's ever cared about this story that we've told, even though we find it fascinating, and I won't go into it, but basically his point was that he knew no one would really resonate with that story. And that it's just for me and him. And his point was like, that's what love is when you have a story that you, a memory or a story that you have together that no one else cares about. That's what love is to him. And he was saying like, go and make loads of memories that no one gives a shit about. Right.
Sure.
And it was a lovely sentiment, really cool sentiment. And I guess like when you see someone that only you and maybe your brother would give a damn about, you know, that's really cool. That's really nice.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That was, I couldn't text my sister. I could have texted my brother, and then I don't have the numbers for my two best friends growing up. I haven't spoken to them in who knows how. Sure. I moved a bunch as a kid.
Right. Okay.
But for those formative years, there were two guys, and we did everything together.
Right.
And they would have been next on the list.
Yeah.
Had, if I mean, I could Facebook message them. Not the same thing, because there's not the immediacy.
Yeah.
But yeah, just...
So what? So have you got an answer to the question then? Is there anything that prideful for you on the show? I mean, we've had reasonably like high level feedback that we wouldn't name drop and stuff like that. But there have been people that obviously watched the show. We've heard that people have enjoyed the show or whatever. But is there anything that would float your boat in terms of pride that's happened?
I mean, I always enjoy it. It's not prideful though. I was going to say, so doesn't really fit. I love it when the players sing along, like they just get so into it and they're just having so much fun. That fills me with a certain amount of joy.
Sure.
I don't know about pride, but joy.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Or if they particularly like a clue, or if they're like the ones that pay attention, that's great. They're not in it to try and, you know, I want to decimate the other individual, but they are like, okay, so here, if I bet, or if I go down to X, then that cuts the lead to this, and I got to do that. Okay, so I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know about pride.
Pride,
I guess I'd have to think
about it. I thought of one based on something you were saying there, and it's a pregame thing that no one ever sees, but you see. And have probably heard multiple times, it's when I'm meeting someone for the first time, because I meet people for the first time a lot on this show, or you know them most of the time. And So it's a friend of yours or whatever, and it's in the pregame, and I join the chat, and it's happened a few times, and it's a really lovely feeling for me as a sort of thin-skinned slash arrogant hybrid of a person when people go.
By the way, you'd be perfect in LA with that combo.
yeah, we've spoken about that. Perfect. Yeah. But like when people go, oh, you know, some people do us the honor of watching a few episodes in the build up to their show, and they go, and they'll just say something really nice about me as a musician. Mm-hmm. And that's really lovely because I'm not a working musician anymore. I basically settle the score is the scratching of the itch for me in terms of music. That's the only thing I do. So it's really nice, like, that I get complimented on my chops a little bit, and that
well deserved.
Well, thank you very much. But yeah, it's nice when someone I've never met before and I'm coming in, I have no idea what they're going to be like, and the first thing they're like is like, Andy, I've just watched this episode, you are a talented man. And I'm like, oh, that's very, very kind, thank you. And that always means a little bit more than I would express back to them. I take that stuff away, and especially if they're, you know, someone significant that I know of from a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously very, very cool. It's nice, you know, because I'm basically this guy in a small town in England, and it doesn't, you know, otherwise they would never have heard of me or whatever. So yeah, it's very cool that I get that kind of door open to it.
Texts from people afterwards. Oh, yeah. And there's one in particular, I can tell you off the air who it was, but I've known him for years and he's a very stoic individual.
Okay.
And, but he's great. He was great on camera. He's always great. And I knew he'd be good on it, so long as we, you know, pick the right stuff that'd be good for him. And afterwards I got 3 texts, 4 texts from him saying, that was so much fun. You guys have a really interesting show there. Andy is crazy talented. Mm. Like, if you want me back, just let me know.
Very nice. Yeah.
And that's, could be the most excited I've seen him about anything.
Oh, nice. Okay.
12 years of knowing him, 14 oh, years cool. of knowing him.
That's cool.
So it's just like, oh, okay, man. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good time.
Unfortunately, we won't be having you back on.
Yeah.
right. Let me go back to Discord sec. Dream guests. No, do you know what? We'll park that for a second and have a think about it. I've got one from Ken Whitehurst. What do you guys do when you're not on the show?
Well, I work on this show. So
you certainly put in way more hours than me. I'll tell you something. And by you, I mean, obviously the viewers, not you. Matt messages me. Say we record a Wednesday night for me, right? So you message me on a Sunday or a Monday. No, it wouldn't be as late as a Monday. It'd be like a Sunday, and you apologize and you say, I've been swamped, but I'll get the list out to you. You'll wake up to it. You do that like sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm always,
I try and have it done by Thursday or Friday.
Yeah. And I'm like,
even though I know you don't practice until day.
Don't get, yeah. But, I'm like, I'm probably going to look at this list like an hour before.
Yeah, but what if? I don't want you waiting on me. What if you have a busy day that day and then you're like, where's my fucking list? And be like, oh, well, I always send in like a lazy asshole at the last minute.
Yeah.
So no, I can put the list together.
No, it's very, very cool that you're so on it. And you obviously, you do work very hard. Actually, I noticed that Houston had asked on Discord about the process.
Because he didn't think he'd be able to make it.
Okay, yeah. Did he asked about the process or something, didn't he? So we can go into that because that kind of touched on it. My main question is for submission. Oh, it's just about me, is it? I think your process is much more interesting. Behind how he learned piano. Oh, I see. I thought it was about the show. How he learned piano and learns the music, mostly from the perspective that I learned through sheet music, and I'm intrigued by those who don't, at least I think. Andy said he doesn't read sheet music, so how did he learn how to play?
Okay.
Yeah.
Just so you know, if you're going to read the question, you need to read it like you're reading it to me, not to yourself.
Yeah, sorry.
You kind of like us, and say, yeah, so then there's music. Just
yeah,
like,
it was, man, so it was so long.
People watching right now.
Yeah, I apologize. It's 1 a.m. Okay.
Go ahead and answer. I'm going to use the restroom real quick.
Okay, yeah. So I'll talk about how I learned piano. Okay, so Houston basically wants to know how I learned piano if I didn't need to learn to read. And so my wife, I don't think she's watching, she's definitely in bed. My wife thinks that it's nonsense that I don't read music, because she's seen me open books that I've never opened before and just play. But there's a little trick that I use. I'm not technically reading music. I just have little tricks that I can use when I open a piano book or whatever it is. You know, like if someone says, can you play this song from a musical and hand me a piano book, then there's a means that I have to play that music without reading it, and it looks like I'm reading it. I actually got into university, like a college for Americans, but basically I had to prove that I was a certain level, and that meant theory as well. And basically I learned a classical piece of music by ear, and just learned when to turn the pages, so I wasn't really reading it, but if you were watching me, it looked like I was. I haven't even started answering the question, sorry, Matt. But basically, yeah, I did go to lessons for like a year when I was about six or seven. I went to lessons, piano lessons, for about a year and hated it pretty much. Didn't like scales and things like that. And all I wanted to do was really play Oasis songs on the piano and Michael Jackson and Billy Joel. And so my piano teacher, getting fed up with me every week coming and having not practiced and haven't like exercised my fingers or anything, he just said, you know what, like, bring in what you want to play. And I brought a piano book in called Easy to Play Oasis, and it had whatever it had at the time. Maybe it wasn't Oasis, maybe it was Queen. Easy to Play Queen, maybe. And we worked on that, and he could tell that I was more enthusiastic about that. And he said to my mum when she picked me up that he shouldn't play classical music. He has no interest in it. But don't let him stop. So yeah. So basically from then it was a case of training my ear, which I didn't know I was doing until it came to articulating answers to questions like this. But I used to do this thing where when my mum would drive me home from school or from football, the radio would be on, and whatever the last song on the radio was, I would go and play it on the piano. And that just became a little trick that I would do. I wanted it to be a party trick because I just always wanted to be impressive to people. And I still do, like, still have that little bug where I like just like being impressive all the time. So so basically radio on the whole drive home, and then the last song on the radio, I would go and play it. And I got so good at doing that that I could basically hit the piano knowing the chord, that I wouldn't have to work it out. I was very good with my ear. And then I would do stuff like the second to last song. So you'd have a song on the radio, and then the next song would start, and I would sing along with that one. And the whole time I'm holding how to play that penultimate song, and just train my ear like that. So that's basically how it happened. My ear is strong. Well, you lose it. I'm not as good as I used to be. Used to be very, very efficient when it came to playing by ear. I could literally play anything, and now it takes me a bit of wiggle room. But there you go. Yeah, that's the answer.
I had a guitar teacher tell me once, and it always rang true once I thought about it. But it was, if you can sing it, you can play it.
Yeah,
you work through the notes. You're like da 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 da, and then you're like, okay, so it's this.
Yeah,
but just the instant recall, I think, is infinitely more difficult. I played instruments my whole life, but to see you work through a song, that is way quicker than I could ever get through a song.
Well, yeah, I guess we haven't published one yet, but Matt and I have been working on sort of mini one-offs to go into YouTube shorts that people will be starting to see on this channel. And it's your first time watching me actually do it. That stuff that I do on my own, where I work out a whole show, but you throw me a thing and say, do you want to do this as a YouTube short? And then you watch me come up with the sound and the figuring out the keys.
Going through the settings and like, what do you think of this? And then play it.
Yeah.
And what sucks is the limitations of the streaming format. Certain things, I'm sure, sound pitch perfect
over here
to you. Yeah. And your, but the, because of the loss of transmission of data, it compresses it down and be like, unfortunately, that strings plus the piano is not coming through. So we have to go piano only or strings only or something like that. So the full orchestration is lost.
What was the one? It was a guitar heavy. Was it? It was electric guitar heavy. It was. There was
Welcome to the Jungle for Jumanji a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it sounded unbelievable on my end, and then you guys were like, couldn't hear.
Yeah.
Like any kind of defining notes or anything.
No, I knew it. I knew the song too. And I'm like, that sucks. Yeah. I know that's what it is. It's a compression problem.
Yeah. So I was playing the, so I'm doing like a Angry Young Man, Billy Joel thing on the keys. And I'm going like that. And you guys couldn't hear any.
No, we could hear the low end of like, and you're like, it was until the music, the lyrics came in, because I think it was in the 5 second round.
Sure.
And the look on both of their faces of like, I have no
idea. Yeah.
And you're like, and trust me, knowing what the song was like, I agree with them, but there's nothing I can do in this moment. And this isn't Andy's fault. This is just the limitations of doing a show.
Exactly. And you can't.
5,000 miles apart.
Sure. Yeah. And we do all right considering that.
Yeah. The technology is still amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Anything on YouTube? Are they still going?
Jeremy Bowers wants to know if you can give him portals from Endgame.
You talk about something or answer another question and I'll come up with that. I've got some notes about that one.
All right. So we got another question and you can, once you go through the notes, I can answer this question. So it's from Kyle Neuhauser. It says, hello all. Do you like that everyone embraces the fun or wish more people went for the win? I think the beauty is the hybrid of the two. That they definitely want to win, but they also don't want to make the game, you know, they don't want to shorten the game. They want to get to all five songs. They want to listen and enjoy it as much as they possibly can. So something like what Paul Oyama did a couple of weeks ago, where he kind of threw one to up the potential chance of it getting to a final song. Or when people know, hey, if we answer this, it'll go to sudden death. That sounds like fun. They both want to win. So I guess, you know, if you can have those two outcomes converge, that's what I want. If you're saying I have to go with a polarity choice of either have fun or go for the win, I choose fun. Because this isn't a go for the win show. Hence us giving three and sometimes four clues. Like, if we're not out to find the world's greatest, because that would be relatively impossible. A and B, that's just not fun for anybody to sign up for. You know, having done the Schmodown is amazing. And you get people there with a level of knowledge that is so flabbergasting to watch. You're just standing in awe. Like I used to love, I didn't hardly watch any matches ever, but if I could help it, if they were doing a Star Wars one on a day that I was in there to record, I would watch that because the level of knowledge that guys would drop, you're like, how do you even know that? Where did you learn that information? Where did you pick it up? What book did you read? Or where in the lore did you find that? It's so wildly impressive. And that is the sheer definition of pointless trivia. Because that is, you're only going to run into a handful of other people that could even challenge you on knowing that. Because if you answered enough questions correctly in a row, then you can just start making it up and you kind of have to believe them because they knew everything up until this point. So that I would embrace the fun because I think that's more in line with what this show is.
I concur. Yeah. If I had my ideal scenario, I would hope that people kind of bet it all. Even if they can win the game, just go, you know what, let's just see what happens because nothing, it doesn't matter. And just go for it. Just double down. If it means if you miss, the other person like ties with you and we go into a tie break, cause there's no prize money, you know?
Yeah. So, there's nothing. Yeah. Some people do go, hey, I'm, you know, 2-1. Can't wait to up it. There are those.
Yeah. And that's great as well. Like you say, there's the hybrid element of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll play a bit of Portals. I've just figured that out a little bit. I won't play much of it, but I do remember. Into there, but that was a bit of Portals for you.
That was a little flat on that last note, my friend.
Yeah I don't know what chord I hit, completely wrong chord, but yeah,
I think it was
lovely score.
What was that last one? What did you play?
I played a D, but the key changes four times throughout that sequence, the whole piece. The key changes four times, and I had it in my head that it goes to a G key, which would have been the D at that point, and it takes one more key change before that. So I guess, let's figure it out. So it goes, so I'm in B flat, right? Yeah, it goes into there. So that would be something like that.
Like, it hits higher than that, doesn't it?
I don't know. I thought it goes there. Something like that. Yeah, then we're in F. So yeah, it goes from B flat F, and then it goes into D or G, sorry. So not too bad though.
Yeah.
Again, not practicing these.
Star Wars. And by the way, you individuals saying, "Hey, can I hear such and such?" I do it too. That's the beauty of my job. When I put together shows, I will usually look. Andy is musical director, and he determines the order of the show. I just say, here are the songs that I think would work best. Yeah. Occasionally, I will parenthetically put in there, can you please put this in the first round? Because I want to hear you play this.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's only happened maybe five times.
Yeah. No, I like that.
There are times where I'm like, God damn it, I love this song. Can you throw this in the first round so I get an opportunity to hear more than. Because I know your tendency to be like, that's a 5 second, and you're not wrong.
I think we know. I think you know where I'm roughly going to be placing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I mean, it's really the first two rounds. You decide the third round, don't you?
Well, because we only stick to scores in the third round.
So you always put them at the bottom of the list. So I just grab them and put them in round three anyway.
Yeah,
and then it's just really like divvying up the next 10 into rounds one and two, and I think you must have an idea, because it does tend to be that there's this like lovely. I find that the 5 second rounders are a goofier in tone.
Sometimes, yeah.
And then the round ones tend to be much more like pretty straightforward songs.
You got to be memorable in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So goofy or something that is just a punch to the head. From a movie that'll make the 5 second round.
Yeah, like I guess the steel drums from Under the Sea is not goofy, but it's still.
You're gonna know it as soon.
You're gonna know that. Yeah. It's obviously it's five memorable ones. Right. What else we got? Oh, I'll go back to Discord and see if there's anything. Eric Grebner asks, is D minor really the saddest of the keys? Yeah.
I've never thought about it.
Yeah, I think it is. Who said that? Was that a thing recently that someone said it? I think it is. I really like it. I love playing around in D minor. What's a movie that's always we did that one kind of Andrew Scanlon, who are your favorite pair of Patreon brothers and why is your answer the Scanlons?
Which Scanlon is that from? Because they now just became my least favorite of the two.
Yeah, Andrew Scanlon. I don't think he's been demoted, to be honest with you. Started in second. Okay. Juan Reyes, favorite foods, and is pizza a thing in England? Favorite foods.
Okay. I didn't know if you wanted to answer as pizza thing, because I'm pretty sure that's a thing damn near everywhere.
Yeah. We have a pizza oven.
Yeah.
I know you have a pizza oven, and yours is significantly better than mine. But yeah, we have a pizza oven in our garden. We do a lot of pizza garden socials. Yeah, we make pretty good pizza here, but not as good as the Nosts. But yeah, pizza is definitely a thing here. We have all the chains. What chains do you have? Pizza Hut, Domino's.
Sure, sure.
Papa John's.
Little Caesars, Papa John's.
We don't have Little Caesars. Never heard of that.
It's trash.
Oh, yeah.
It is. They just send the pizzas frozen. They're made in a factory somewhere, and they're sent to the locations frozen, and they just throw them in.
Yeah, shit.
And they basically, in essence, nuke it. They're super cheap, and I loved them as a kid because you get two pizzas. That was their thing. You get two pizzas for basically the price of anybody else's.
Okay.
And it had like this, basically it was like a pizza box flayed out. So instead of being closed, it's fully opened, and there's a pie on each side, and then there was paper that wrapped the whole thing. So as a kid, you'd like tear into the paper, and then you have a pepperoni pizza and like a sausage or something else. And you have two different pizzas. Made you so happy, but the pizzas are trash.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite, food, Matt? Is kind of, are you, how do you feel about pizza being in a, you know, a pizza centric, environment?
I don't eat it as often as I'm assuming everyone thinks I do.
Would assume you do. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty rare actually.
Right.
But I have a lot of, body dysmorphia. I used to be heavy set. So now there are certain things where just like, I can't eat that because it just reminds me of a shitty time in my life. And psychologically it fucks with me. Yeah. It took me forever to eat pasta.
Oh yeah.
Forever. Really? It was one of my favorite meals as a fat guy. I used to make this pasta that was just delicious. And looking back on it and be like, yeah, dude, you just gorged like 3,000 calories. Of course you enjoyed that. It was crazy heavy and delicious. And I'd eat it, and then I'd pass out because I was in such a food coma, and I'd do that like twice a week. But yeah, favorite foods? I mean, there's all kinds of them. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't love a good burger and fries? There's an Indian place by me that is dynamite. I love their Indian food.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't know. We're getting into soup season, so I'm looking forward to soups. Yeah.
All right.
Steak is probably my all-time favorite, but I also love damn near every seafood.
Interesting. How did you get on with British food when you were here?
You chose
a couple of great restaurants, didn't you? You went to the Indian place in London.
Indian place was so good, we went twice.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. And then we bought you the cookbook for that.
Yeah. I tried to make the black doll from that cookbook. I couldn't do it. Dude, it took like 7 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay. Apologies. Yeah.
Yeah, like, why is it? I looked at the recipe and I was like, this takes a long time. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try. And then it was okay. Right. It was nowhere near as good as theirs.
Interesting.
Theirs was dynamite. Overall, it's kind of like everywhere. It was hit and miss. Some places were really good and interesting. And other places like, that was fine.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know where you're going. Did I try like some meat pies and shit? Yes, I did. I tried it like we both did. We did a fish and chips. We tried to do like some of the.
I see. Meat pies is like what? Not a thing. Oh, because your pies are.
No, we're not Dickens characters. So we don't eat like it's the Industrial Revolution anymore.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. No, I get you. Yeah. So there's a thing called a Cornish pasty over here, and it's to do with the design of it was because men that would go down into the coal mines or whatever, you know, they'd be gone for the day. In order for them to be able to eat their food without cutlery, we're going way back in time, but the wives, that's why I sound like I'm genderist and it's just how it was at the time, but the wives would make their meal everything you'd want, like your meat, potatoes, your gravy, your vegetables, all in one thing, and then kind of almost like a calzone, like wrap it up into a pastry and heat that pastry through. That's called a Cornish pasty. And they're still a thing. You can get them pretty much anywhere. And and I guess there are derivatives of that, but that's like the classic British.
I had like some sort of steak and something pie. We went to a pie shop.
Steak and kidney is pretty popular.
Yeah, I wasn't going to have that. It was a steak and something else.
Steak and ale. something.
Kidney and liver, I don't ever need to eat ever again.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, we do meat pies. Yeah, that is a pretty popular thing. I was just going to tell people to, if anyone ever wants to feel hungry, go to Matt's wife's Instagram for the business, which is called Two Saucy Broads Pizza on Instagram. And their photos of their products just make me want to get on a plane every single time they post.
Yeah. I will have her like specifically bring home their pizza of the month this month because I love it.
So good.
But
some
I
of the
add,
dough balls that you guys post. Like, look at, I'm going to show the camera. Look at that.
Yeah.
Like immediately want to book a flight. So yeah. Amazing. So yeah, I'm very excited for hitting that restaurant, as you know. So yeah, Anna and I made my favorite starter. Do you guys call it starter, entree? We made my favorite starter, and it's from a restaurant called Duck and Waffle, which is a 24-hour restaurant. So you can go for dinner there, or you can go for breakfast there. You can watch the London sunrise over the skyline. Like, it's a really cool, interesting circular restaurant in the financial district of London. And it's a glass elevator that rockets up to the top floor. It's so much fun. And they do a starter, which is just so expensive for a single thing, but it's a bacon wrapped date.
Yeah.
With the manchego cheese inside.
Okay.
And it's just like, it's like £7 for a single one. So if you've got a party of four people, you're like, dude, spending like £30 to get.
You can make those. We make, there's a place by us that has these dessert dates that are delicious. It's,
oh yeah.
And Catherine figured out the recipe, and now we'll make them at home every once and again.
Yeah. Anna made like, Anna made like 15 for a dinner party we had the other day. Everyone had about, you know, three or four each or whatever. And, she made a bunch, and it obviously cost us nothing. Like,
you know, it's so much cheaper.
Yeah. But in this, you've got the whole view of London, and they make these things, and the dates they get are like ridiculous. And it is a hefty date wrapped in Parma ham that's been cooked up on the fryer and manchego cheese that's kind of melting through. And it's my favorite thing. But now we make them at home, so I don't need to like go all the way up an elevator to eat them.
Yeah, there's certain things we can't make at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, from that same restaurant, they have the best hummus I've ever had in my life. And we've tried making hummus. We suck at it.
Oh, yeah.
And they fly their hummus in from a very specific grower somewhere in the Mediterranean. And then they have a roasting process that they specifically do and everything else. And you try it and you're like, that's just perfect. That is the perfect hummus for me. It's great. And then, but the dates we figured out how to make, we've tried to make their hummus. It's nothing. You know, it's the store brand versus the good brand when you have the two and you're like, that doesn't taste anywhere near as good as this other. But yeah, there's very few foods that I'm not a fan of.
That's interesting. Have you had a roast dinner? I guess it would be similar to Thanksgiving for you, would it?
Depending on, you know, what's on it. No, there are certain things like blood pudding. Or black pudding or whatever the fuck it is. Never had that just because the idea of putifying blood to me doesn't sound all that tasty.
Black pudding doesn't tend to go on our roast dinners. It's more black pudding goes with our English fry up mostly, our breakfast food. So yeah, you get black and white pudding. Black is blood and white is fat, and they're very tasty, but it's one of those things like it's a disgusting concept.
I think you needed to grow up with that one.
Yeah. Like, so yeah, I Irish heritage. So we had black pudding a lot. But
you
know
what I'll never understand about English?
Yeah.
The English rather.
Sure. The English. Yeah.
Why the fuck are beans the goddamn number one home run choice? Like, let's just slap those motherfuckers on toast. That's a goddamn meal. Or a full English breakfast, and there's just this of beans off on the side, and be like, oh,
I see.
It's baked just beans? You guys open cans of Heinz beans and just throw it on some toast, and be like, that's the ultimate snack and be like, guys, it's fucking beans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of my favorite, like when I was in college and I was fending for myself, one of my favorite things to do is a part baked roll. Obviously, like cook that through, and then it would be baked beans mixed in with cheese, cheesy beans. Honestly, delicious. Yeah, I don't know what our fascination
It's a whole color. It's like beans on toast.
Yeah,
seems huge. To be like a national delicacy, and literally, I don't understand why.
Ezra has that for dinner, like all the time. Beans on toast, loves it. He kind of scrapes the beans off the toast and just picks them up one by one, but he loves beans on toast. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I didn't know that was an us thing. I just found that out, that that was a English thing.
Oh, that is full on an English thing. That does not exist in any other country that I know of, where if you just said beans on toast and you see erections rise up from people and be like, that's my fucking jam. Like, that doesn't exist anywhere else. Do other countries have their, you know, equivalents? Sure. I can't think of what the US's is, but it's not like we don't eat like shit as well.
Yeah.
But it's just the idea of simplistically beans on toast. And what I've heard, I don't know if it's the case, but the number one selling is Heinz, which is an American company.
Sure.
So you guys are, it's an American bean and you're throwing it on toast, and that's an English delicacy, or an English staple, I guess, more accurately.
Yeah. Ezra eats so many baked beans that we buy the like supermarket brand now, because it's Heinz is like four times the price. But if I'm like lazy and sort of desperate for something, and I make some beans up with some omelet or whatever.
Yeah, that sounds disgusting.
The store brand baked beans are disgusting compared to Heinz. Heinz are, it's probably like they slap it full of sugar or whatever, but sugar and salt, but it tastes significantly worse. I think it's, they don't pull it off.
When so I anyway. See pictures of like the full English breakfast, I'm like, dude, guys, half of this looks delicious, like full on delicious.
Yeah.
And the other half with the black pudding potentially there and the fucking beans. Beans takes up a quarter of the plate. Be like, that does not need to be on this plate. First off, there's plenty of protein here, guys. We've slaughtered enough animals that you don't need to bring in legumes. To like increase protein.
Do KFC do baked beans as a side? Over there as well.
Was that that's part of like Southern delicacy. Yeah, baked beans. You also get that baked beans could be potentially a side with barbecue, but it's like selective as to when baked beans is a quantifiable side that everybody goes, sure, that could be a choice.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
Can you get baked beans at other fast food restaurants? Because if it's not a Southern delicacy or a fried chicken place here, ain't gonna happen.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah, same. Yeah, it's just KFC that do it as a side. Okay. And then, any cafe will put baked beans on the breakfast. You're obviously exactly right.
Yeah, you couldn't get that here if you wanted to, unless they're known for their beans.
That's interesting. Okay.
If it's a Mexican place, you get like refried or potentially black beans.
Okay. Yeah.
That can come with breakfast.
Okay.
But refried is like, well, okay, that's a nice treat because it's just so unhealthy for you.
Well, yeah, I was unaware that baked beans were such a contentious issue. And
it's not. It's just every time I see it, I've had someone ask me before and be like, oh, what do you think about like the full English? I can't remember what the discussion was.
You know, I wouldn't consider baked beans to be part of the full English personally. I think that is like some places do it, most don't. Like when you stay in a hotel, you normally get a full English like the next morning. I don't think of baked beans as like part of that traditional English breakfast. I don't know. I mean, if he's watching, Anthony, let me know. What do you think? I know it can be. I just don't think.
No, we got him. We got Phil. Any other?
Yeah, Phil. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Phil, get
English people.
Man.
This chat goes on for a while. Yeah. So I just scrolled to the very, very bottom to see if anybody.
Yeah, get in there. Okay.
So Camshaft is now talking about, he's got dry bean ideas.
It's probably.
But I just don't. Why in the world do beans just have such a stranglehold on what English people choose to eat? It's baffling to me. It's fucking baked beans. They're good, but
I've got something that is there a kind of well, first of all, do you have the phrase old wives' tale? Is that a thing that you guys... Yeah. So is there an old wives' tale thing about carrots and eyesight in America? Oh, okay. That's interesting as well.
That comes from you guys. You know that.
Yes, that's right. I mean, you'd be the guy that would know because you're so...
Yeah, you tried to convince the Germans.
Yeah, it was like a propaganda on carrots.
Yeah, it was. Because because of early radar, you didn't want to let on the fact that you guys had radar and had been decoding Enigma. You decoded Enigma machine. So you spread this propaganda like, no, we eat tons of carrots. And that actually helps with your eyesight because of the vitamin C in it. And that's where the wives' tale got spread because you didn't want to release the military secrets.
That's interesting. I know of a different etymology to that.
Oh, that's what I had read.
Well, I would take your knowledge over this over mine and whatever I've heard. But I was under the of the understanding that in terms of import and export, there was an abundance of carrots, and they had to find a way to get English people eating more carrots because it was the only sort of resource available in terms of ration, and that the bombings had created like a smog across southern UK, and they were basically like, carrots is your means to see better in the smog. So I'd heard this kind of thing, that it was a means of getting British people to eat more carrots because of the overabundance of that compared to other foods or whatever. But but the Enigma thing is way more interesting.
That's what I read. According to Ant, full English does not have baked beans per se.
Interesting.
It's either black or white pudding and a fried tomato.
Oof! I always ask for no tomatoes on.
Yeah, I don't like cooked tomatoes.
No, get away.
I like it like a sauce or something, but if it's just a hunk of cooked tomato, it's always like the texture sucks, the flavor sucks.
No, I completely agree. We're
if you want to emulsify that and blend it up and put it in something, I'm all for it. Go crazy.
Yeah, Scanlan, the favorite Scanlan, asks, do you both perform live? You with stand up and me with music. Do you do much stand up anymore? Are you,
it's sporadic at best?
Sporadic, yeah.
Yeah. It used to be 7 nights a week.
Yeah.
Over a day. Yeah,
right. With music now, it's only project based. So if someone wants me to do something for them, then I can do it. But I don't go and perform live. So like, I did that thing where I took an element of Settle the Score to the quiz night, and I performed in front of people for that. And I might have something later in October where there's a singer that I work with where she wants to do a little show, and I'll, you know, we'll put something together for that. But I don't do anything like that anymore. But there's plenty of footage out there of me performing on tour and stuff like that if people want to find it.
Just so you know, Adam Jimenez says beans on toast in Mexico is a thing as well. But I also just mentioned Mexican's the only place where you're going to find beans with breakfast. So I'm not surprised that beans on toast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Troy says avocado toast, Matt. It's fine. They charge way too much for it, so I'm not going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I love avocado, but I'd rather get something else. If I'm going to pay the crazy price they're going to ask for fucking avocado on toast, I'd rather just get, I like two sunny side up eggs with some bacon and toast. That's my go-to. Maybe a little breakfast potatoes or something.
Mm-hmm.
Some
of my favorite breakfasts I had in Vegas, but I feel like, it was because I potentially needed breakfast more than any other time that I've had breakfast.
Sure.
It's such a late night. And then
being starving helps with a meal, makes it taste that much better. Yeah. One of the best omelets I've ever had was at a truck stop.
Right. Yeah. So it was kind of,
I remember. So at that truck stop, for 2 summers, I followed Fish around, went to a bunch of different concerts.
Sure. Okay.
So I was on the road for a month each summer and went to, 10, 12 concerts. and we were driving through and we're at this rest stop. It was me and a couple other dudes and I'm eating my omelet. It's a fucking omelet and I'm using a fork and a knife. And my friend turns to me and was like, why the, like a discussion of why I'm using a knife on eggs. And I just looked at it and I was like, you're right. I had never thought about it. I'd always used a knife because I don't know why. And I still remember the look of befuddlement that he gave me and then me, I guess, reciprocated back at this idiocy. But it was so late in the day, or I guess early in the day. It's like 3-4 in the morning. We're starving, hungry, and you're just kind of mad almost because you've been driving nonstop and you need sustenance. Just like that. Yeah, I don't know why I'm using this. It's a great omelet, though. Still remember it.
I do like a really good omelet. I think that I use full cutlery on omelets.
Yeah, I don't. Not since then. Now I'm like, I use the side of my fork.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Funny. I'm having a look in the YouTube stuff.
Well, I mean, I think we've done our due, you know, diligence on this. We're at an hour and almost 40 minutes in.
Yeah.
So I think we're good if we want to call it a show. Plus it's pushing, 2 a.m. almost your time?
Yeah. Well, wait a sec. I'm seeing a comment that says, is it as cool as I think or just another theater? Is this a conversation that's happening?
I think there was definitely a chat conversation.
All right. Well, you guys get on with it then.
Yeah, they can't just listen.
We could just walk away and they could just carry on whatever they're talking about.
Potentially. Have a discussion about beans, guys. Let us know how that goes.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Do you know what? We did a quiz in the Context Clues group this week. My parents are on a cruise and every day they get a quiz and it's like cryptic clues, very similar to our Context Clues, actually. Some of them I'm definitely borrowing. And so my dad sent me the sheet for the films. They had a films day where it was a list of 30 clues and each one related to a movie. And I sent him back my answers. And then I thought, oh, the Context Clue group will have fun with this. And they did. And I'm trying to think if there's any on there that that would be good. Do you know what? I'm going to post it. I'm going to post the picture on Instagram. So go and follow me on Instagram. What's my Instagram account, Matt? You normally say it, not me. STS_AndyM.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go and follow me on Instagram. I'm going to post that. And then you can comment with your answers. It was a lot of fun. I think anyone that's in the Context Clue group will attest that it was really good fun and challenging.
By the way, Ant is now rescinded. Beans are part of yours.
What? Why are you changing your mind? What happened in that time?
And English doesn't have black or white pudding tradition.
No, that is an Irish thing, yeah. Canada has ruined me. Beans are involved. I'm totally wrong. Well, what happened in between one answer and the next? I feel like you should have left it where it was.
Yeah, with you being correct, but I'm telling you, I've seen a lot of pictures of full English with goddamn beans on the fucking plate.
Fair.
No need to be there.
Will Andy play us out? Yeah, absolutely. Whatever you want. Someone asked earlier, what's my, I think it was Andrew Scanlon I saw on Discord ask, or on the WhatsApp group, maybe, what's my favorite to play on the new setup.
Mm-hmm.
And annoyingly, I think it's one of the ones that you and I talked about earlier before we came on live that, it basically like struggles a little bit. But the when I'm putting together these soundscapes for different songs or scores, it's kind of sometimes surprising where you find the perfect sound. And so the sound that I end up using for this particular score that I will reveal was a timpani roll, and it's never where I thought I'd go. I normally have an idea of the kind of sound that I'm looking for, where it might fit, which category it's going to be in, and then I kind of work it to that, scrolling through, like playing like a middle C as I'm rolling through the sounds, like trying to find the right, you know. And it was a timpani roll, which I never expected, because I wanted something a little more mechanical. But in my search for the right thing, kind of timpani roll, when I started rolling it down octaves. So I took it down and down and down and down the octaves to the point where it almost became not recognizable as timpani roll, which is just a big like orchestral drum. And it, and the way that the keyboard sound has it is that it's kind of played multiple times, as if you can picture in an orchestra someone with a like a timpani drum and they kind of go like that, they kind of hit it and rock the timpani drum, they kind of let the weight of it reverb on it like that. And so when you take it all the way down octaves and octaves and octaves, and when I had that timpani roll go down as many octaves as my keyboard can do, but still playing the D minor, which is where the and I was like, that is ridiculous that it worked out like that. And I was looking for something mechanical, some sort of pipe sound. It's really cool when you find stuff like that. You can just rock it down the piano and it sounds enough like it. So that one is a lot of fun. And then I won't play it now because I'm not sure of the levels and I have to be really careful that I don't like blow people's ears off. But when I figured out the sound of the Kill Bill Ironside.
Oh yeah, the
it rolls up,
almost the theremin type of feel.
Yeah. And so there's a technique that I do when I play it, which is that I need the first note is the high note, but it slides up to that note, which means I need to give the keyboard a reference point. So I with my thumb I grace the octave below the note that I need to get to. So I just touch it enough that it doesn't count as a note and you don't hear it, but it just references that note. Then I hit with my little finger, I hit the note I need to get to, and it goes from that up there. If I turn down my volume, I'll be able to quickly play that. I think it's just called Kill Bill on here. There we are. So I hit that one, but I hit it so softly that, there you go.
Yeah.
So that was me playing like. So if I do it not gracefully, you hear the two notes like that. But I never try and thought do about it.
You might be able to use Snatch again because that'll work for one of the songs on Snatch. We haven't used Snatch in
for a long time.
110 episodes, 120 episodes.
Yeah. So they're my two favorites because they have gone from a place of basically I have no idea how this will work. Into holy shit, this sounds those are the two that I might have messaged you about to say I think I've nailed this, you know, when I message you and say I've got something.
Yeah, Kill Bill went from it was tough to now that's an easy one now.
It's instant. Yeah.
How dramatically am I altered how I viewed that when I put together the show.
Exactly that. Like if I go back to just a piano, I think it's like, oh God, where am I? Am I on a piano sound there?
I think Terminator's, if you just took off the timpani, it still works.
Yeah, Terminator does.
Yeah.
But this this Kill Bill one where it does this kind of weird, that's the chord. But when I do that in the Kill Bill sound, it sounds absolutely fine. And then this wouldn't, if I was just on a piano.
Kind of where, but
this chord here, you don't recognize that as the Kill Bill thing, but if
it just sounds like dissonant sound.
Yeah. But if I went back to, I mean, maybe it wouldn't now, but it's this, that is the same chord I just played on the piano, but that's now sounds. So yeah, very cool. Like I like it when stuff comes together that weren't, it wasn't possible before. It kind of affirms the decision to buy, this 80s synthy keyboard, which I still haven't figured out like 90% of what it does.
I'm sure that thing's pretty impressive.
Special. Very, 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 very impressive. So yeah, I'm happy to, before we head off, happy Canadian Thanksgiving to everyone for the weekend. Well, my opinion on that is you didn't back me on the beans thing, so no. No, happy Canadian Thanksgiving. And are they two different dates? That's quite interesting.
I
didn't know.
I mean, I knew they did Thanksgiving. I do, you know, when they do it, I have no idea. Ours is the same as the third Thursday of November.
Third Thursday of November, yeah. Yep.
So it changes the date itself, but it's the third Thursday.
we have a American family in Swindon. My uncle went to New York when he was 21, and he married a girl from the Bronx, and they live in Swindon now. And so I do attend Thanksgivings and 4th of July parties, quite interestingly, on a pretty regular basis in terms of annually. So that's quite fun. So, you know, it's kind of done in a, feels a bit touristy because we kind of like have American flags and stuff like that. And I don't know how legitimate that is to what you guys do. Maybe you do.
Depends on what
very American is, yeah.
But 4th of July, yeah, there's flags up everywhere.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, yeah. And then Thanksgiving's like turkey hats and...
Yeah, no, whatever. That's not...
That's not something a thing.
That I've ever seen? No.
Yeah. Maybe it's the beans on toast thing where like it happens...
I think it's you guys just trying to celebrate another's... You know, yeah. I don't think our Cinco de Mayo or St. Pat's Day celebrations or anything else that other countries started that we co-opted as just another day to get, you know, blind drunk.
Yeah,
I don't
sure,
think any
sure.
of our celebrations are anything remotely near the authentic version. So
yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, so I'm happy to leave it there. That was a lot of fun. It was nice to see so many comments, and I'll go through after and anything that was anything that anybody needed to know, I'll go and respond to you. But that was a lot of fun, right? That was fun.
Yeah, it's a good time. Thank you to everybody that stayed with us. I mean, we still have after this long, we still have a crazy number of people watching. We've had so many coming in and out of the chat, leaving tons of comments and questions. Our thanks to all of you. And for us throwing this together, you know, 48 hours ago or so, so many people showed up. So it was great that all of you were kind enough to join us today. And do you want to play us out, or do you want me to do the regular outro? Do you know the chords?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Oh, not in that sound. Does anybody ever hear the... there's a whole choir that sing right at the end of the outro, but I think it kind of disappears before then because of the timing of the episode that ends.
Well, also, I never put it together that it was a choir. Now that you say it's choir and be like, oh, okay, sure. It just sounds like it's the same, a layered of the same instrument. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's just like this bit. I think it's right at the end. So it goes like,
yeah, it does.
It's kind of going like, it's kind of like playing. And then this choir go, right at the end. I don't think anyone's ever heard it.
I don't think I have, and I've heard that a lot of times.
Oh, Dan Nye says the choir comes in for the last second, so he's heard it. That's good, yeah.
Yeah, but it just sounds like, I didn't know the actual words.
So now that you're able to tune your ears into that kind of thing, it's they're singing, oh, yeah, like, oh, yeah, like that. I thought it was just funny when I was designing the outro. So yeah, but this is the chord. C-sharp minor. So hopefully that is the right chord to go into the outro, and you're welcome to do it at any point, but there we go.
All right. Well, that is it for this week's Settle the Score. Thank you to everybody that joined us. And for those that listen, hopefully you have this later tonight or first thing in the morning. And that is it for this week's Settle the Score. You can follow Andy at STS_AndyM, and you can follow me at Matt Nost. We'll see you guys next week with another new edition of Settle the Score. Until then, adios. Are you not playing? I thought you were playing.
Oh, I was just going to play the chord into the thing. Okay. And everyone stay for the oh yeah. Right key. Got to have the right key. Go on.